chaperone can get a number. The world's in slumber, let's misbehave. There's something wild about you, child, that's so contagious. Let's be outrageous, let's misbehave. When Adam won Eve's hand, he wouldn't stand for teasing. He didn't care about those apples out of season. They say the spring means just one thing to little lovebirds. We're not above birds. Let's misbehave.
Bang Bang, written by Snowy Elephant, read by Jean Currier and Rose.
May 1920, New York City. Dean. The dulcet tones of Al Jolson crooned through the delicate formal party as college graduates mingled for the last time together. The atmosphere, soft and quiet, sometimes punctuated by a shrill laugh or a booming chuckle that radiated to the rafters. It was formal, but people wanted to have a good time with dancing and small chatter. After tonight, things would get serious as the mad scramble for law school and banking jobs would begin. One young man, dressed to the nines in a long suit coat, gently rolled trousers, and a pair of shiny Oxfords, sat off to the side, ignoring the crowd. He perched himself between a bookshelf and a giggly young blonde woman who went by the name of Grace Moore. She laughed as the young man, Sam, sang softly and off-key into her ears to Swanee, then whistled in her neck. The couple, their attention turned to themselves, neglected to see another young man watching them from the other side of the room between the dancing bodies. The other man, dressed far too casually for the evening soiree, smiled as Grace pushed Sam away, still laughing as she rubbed her neck. Dean never cared for college. Not like he had the opportunity to go, but if he did, he always told himself that there was no point. He liked guns and the chase, while his little brother liked books and the prudes. Plus, he looked like a mummy dressed in these funny suits, and he felt far more comfortable in his own clothes with his gun by his side and a grit to his step. Fancy boys don't help society, he would always tell himself. But now Sam was one of those fancy boys, and he wore the look well. Their father, John, one of the assistant chief detectives of the NYPD, tried in vain to get Sam down his and Dean's path, but Sam refused, adamant on becoming a lawyer. Dean laughed in his face, but Sam kept pushing until one day their father gave in. To this day, Dean wasn't sure if it was just John giving up, or if it was their father coming to respect Sam's passion. Regardless, it got Sam exactly where he wanted. A Columbia University graduate, high honors with a little Deb on his arms, well on his way into a productive career as a lawyer. The tune changed to My Blue Heaven, and Sam pulled Grace to her feet, and they danced with other couples around the room, still lost in each other. Dean, not spotted, made for the exit. He had intended on talking to Sam that night, but decided, with a pull of guilt at his heart, that it could wait until later. Later came in the form of a 3 a.m. accidental break-in that Dean fully did not expect to happen. He followed Grace and Sam to their Greenwich apartment, careful to keep himself out of sight. In the 4 years since Sam left for college, Dean lost track of his brother and had no idea where he lived anymore due to limited contact and Dean's missions with his father as part of the detective division. Bad on his part, yes, but it was no problem he couldn't figure out just by following his clueless brother. Once or twice, Sam looked back over his shoulder into the shadows, but Dean knew he was well hidden after years of experience. Dean waited outside until the two were in the apartment and the lights came on. No matter how he spun it, he knew it to be awkward walking up to his brother's apartment at 3 a.m. when the pair probably wanted to get all comfy and cozy. Fuck it. He marched up to the front door and rang the buzzer. Nothing. Peering into the darkness, he double-checked he had the right number before pressing it again. Nothing. It was broken. He smacked the useless thing in anger before heading back out onto the street and looking up. They were on the 3rd floor, and the lights were already starting to shut off. Dean tried telling himself he could wait until morning, but the negative fear and the thought of death filled his brain. He jogged over to the side alley and saw the fire escape, and smiled to himself. The window leading to the escape was cracked open just enough for Dean to wedge his fingers through and lift. It squeaked, and Dean winced, pausing and straining to hear any sign of movement. Satisfied, he continued opening the window as slow as he could, before it was wide enough to wedge through. He slid into the kitchen with ease, narrowly avoiding knocking over the window plants and dirty dishes. Brushing his hands off on his pants, he turned only to kiss a frying pan. The blow, hard and sudden, knocked Dean to the ground. A light turned on and Sam rushed into the room. Grace, armed with her pan, turned to him panicked, curlers falling out of her hair. "Call the cops, Sam!" she cried, turning back to a moaning and groaning Dean. Sam just stood there, shaking with silent laughter. Dean stumbled onto his feet, and Grace made to strike again, and Dean threw up his hands in surrender. "Easy! Easy, Tiger!" he moaned, touching his face gingerly, blood trickling from his nose. "You're going to tear my face off!" He heard Sam laughing behind Grace and smiled, wincing in pain. "You teach her that?" Sam shook his head. "She knows how to defend her own territory without me." Grace lowered the frying pan and shifted her gaze back and forth. "You two know each other?" Sam raised an eyebrow. "In a manner of speaking?" And ouch, that hurt. But Dean supposed he had that coming. While they were both busy, Dean never made any conscious effort to reach out to Sam when he first went to college, diving headfirst into his father's old cases. "Oh, me and Sammy? We go way back," Dean played, but he stared at Sam, hoping for the love of God he could read Dean's mind. Sam glanced at him, nodded his head once, and put a hand on Grace's shoulder. "Grace, this is my brother Dean. Dean, this is Grace, my fiancé. Yeah, I know." Dean pointed to the ring on Grace's finger. "Good for you. Though she's a bearcat of a woman, let me tell you." Grace raised the pan again, but Sam lowered her arm. "Why'd you break into my apartment?" Dean wiped his nose again and looked around while stepping closer to Sam. "We need to talk. Alone. And you couldn't use the door? The door was locked, man. Come on." Sam looked from Grace to Dean, wheels turning. "No. No, whatever you need to tell me, you can say it in front of her." "Damn it, Sam." They actually had no obligation to keep their father's work private. After all, he was a prominent figure in the NYPD. But since Sam trotted off to college, John had immersed himself in underground work, driving out gangs from the seedy underbelly of New York City. Dean didn't dare risk John's work, especially now that... Dean cleared his throat and glared at Sam. "Dad's on a hunting trip, and he hasn't been home in a few days." And, like magic, the amusement on Sam's face melted away, and he looked too serious for a 22-year-old college graduate in his pinstripe pajamas and house slippers. John's hunts were legendary in his family, and only his family. They were the hunts for the most notorious baddies and bimbos around to ensure the city's safety. After the death of their mother when they were babies, John took extra precaution, believing she died from carelessness on his end. Over the years, John picked up the trail of Mary's killers, but the trail always grew cold. The boys knew better than to risk exposing their father. But now, with Dean's coded words, it was clear John might already be in danger. "Do you think he's lost? Have you contacted the park officials?" Grace's voice popped up by Sam's side, also looking concerned. "Bless her," Dean thought. "Yeah, well, no, sorta. Just got a word from a ranger. He missed his check-in," Dean lied, not taking his eyes off Sam. "Well, what, Grace, can you hang tight for a second?" Sam interrupted. Grace looked back and forth between them before rolling her eyes and tossing the pan into the sink. The bedroom door slammed and Dean shook his head. "I just got a bad feeling, man. Bobby said Dad should have been back 3 days ago." "This isn't the first time this happened, right? Remember when I was 8, he was a week overdue." "Yeah, but this is different," Dean deadpanned. "He went after some torpedoes up by the Bronx. He thought they were connected to Ma." The silence hung in the air, heavy between them. Their father uncovered something big, there was no doubting that. But Dean wasn't sure how far he'd be willing to let him and Sam go to get him back. Dean wasn't up to grade like his father, just a young new detective on the squad. As Dean stood in the perfectly decorated living room of the apartment, he realized he had started to drag Sam back into something Sam didn't want any part of, and risked his safety by even following him. "But, look, you don't have to come with me. It's okay, I know you're with Grace, and I don't want something to happen to you." Sam raised a challenging eyebrow. And where do you think you're going that I can't follow or take care of myself? Dean keeps quiet and turns. Stan scoffs behind him and crosses his arms. You're not serious. Look at my face and tell me if I'm serious. Dean turned back to Sam, who rolled his eyes. I know you and him never saw eye to eye, but he's our father, and I need to make sure he's all right. Hell, it's my job now. It's what they pay me for. Dean pointed at the bathroom door. I don't want to drag you back into this. I really don't. Not with Mrs. Grundy in there. Sam frowned. But all I'm asking is for a couple of days. Please. I can't do this without you, Sammy. Sam looked back to the door and sighed, and patted Dean on the shoulder before turning and heading back to the room. He stopped, with his hand resting on the knob. Without turning back, he sighed, It's Sam.
May 1920, Boston. Prison best described the dingy basement where Jimmy worked. Bars streaked the feeble sunlight that trickled through the grimy windows, and conditions were dodgy at best. He never bothered to Sam Eep or dust. It would come back in 2 nights' time. A guard stood outside his door, more for his family's protection than his own, and he even escorted Jimmy to the bathroom when need be, causing Jimmy to become flustered and training himself not to take a leak until the workday was over. In the Boston winters, the basement became so frigid that Jack Frost would paint his pictures on the inside walls, creeping ever slowly to Jimmy's desk and paperwork. That caused him to bundle up in massive layers to the point where it became hard to bend over and write. The summers were brutal as well. Even though basements stay cooler in the summer, the added heat from the lamps, the tourists, buses, and trains would have Jimmy down to his skivvies in a mere hour upon arrival. He only hoped on those days his brothers wouldn't come to visit. Today, the sun shone and the birds sang. A rare, beautiful Saturday spring day over Boston. And Jimmy was trapped inside his cage, watching people walk past, laughing and singing through his little solitary window. A tap and a scuffle, and Jimmy shifted his attention over to the corner opposite him. Another rat. Jimmy rolled his eyes and went back to work. He long gave up on the battle for dominance in the basement, and he and the rats and mice and cockroaches learned to get along. Sometimes he would even leave part of his lunch out for them. Sighing, Jimmy pulled another paper towards him. Numbers, numbers, and more numbers. Being the family's glorified accountant had little merit or perks to it, but it was a job they needed Jimmy to do, so he did it. He longed to be out on the streets or in the pits with his brothers, but the opportunity never arose. Until it did, Jimmy sat in his prison, calculating numbers and making sure all financial needs were met. Frowning, Jimmy looked from one sheet to another. Another discrepancy. This made the third one in 4 months, and $300 disappeared out of thin air. Jimmy was no mathematician, but school-grade sums never gave him any trouble. Doubtful he made a mistake, he still went back and crossed out the numbers, adding them again. The gap remained. This only happened once before since Jimmy took this job over a decade ago. He brought it to his brother Gabe, and he said he'd take care of it. That was 5 years ago, and now it seemed that the problem was not taken care of. Jimmy loved Gabe. He had a warped sense of humor, but he never seemed to take his responsibilities to heart. He had to bring it to someone, though. They wouldn't listen to him on this. As much as he loved his family, they didn't see him as a person who commanded respect. Which is probably why Jimmy worked in a shithole. Jimmy thought for a moment to bring the papers directly to their father himself, but squashed it out as quickly as it came. He hadn't seen his father in years. The family grew, brothers and sisters joining the family, and his father walled himself up in his office. Apparently, some of Jimmy's older brothers saw him once or twice, but Jimmy himself hardly had any memories of the man. And what he did remember wasn't happy. When Ralph, a cold and calculated Negro man from Alabama, came up, Jimmy's father put him in charge and left it at that. Jimmy didn't mind Ralph. He was a good man. But there was something about his stare that would make you want to hide in a corner and wait until he passed you over. It was no wonder he was picked to head the family's affairs and not one of the blood brothers. Jimmy shuffled the papers together, tapping his foot in thought. If he went to tell them, he'd probably receive the same reaction as he did several years ago, and that'd be that. If he didn't go, then the files might get him in trouble for not bringing attention to the issue. "I guess I'll go then," he thought, straightening his tie and cuffs. Where Jimmy worked on the Tremont was one of four buildings that his family owned in Boston. They called themselves the Kings, and the only people who needed to know knew. They also knew exactly where the Kings did business, what times, and if anyone were to interfere, the Kings would schedule a beheading. Jimmy didn't like those. It was all very archaic, and truth be told, Jimmy didn't really care. All he cared about at the end of the day was his family's safety, his own safety, a bed, and a roof over his head. Of course, since childhood, Jimmy knew the goings-on with what his fathers and brothers planned. But he also knew that they provided the people in Boston a service. A service to forget reality for a while. To feel protected and cared for. And that's what being a family is all about. Giving back to the community. The building Jimmy worked in, on the corner of Tremont and Boylston, just held some of their offices, mostly their lawyers. Two other buildings resided harborside by Central Wharf, a safe house for their boats which would go out into the harbor and rendezvous with smugglers, and the final building, in North End, housed the major players, including Jimmy, their father in the top part of the apartment, and subsequent floors housed Jimmy, Gabe, Michael, Ralph, Leo, and several others. When Lou, Jimmy's oldest blood brother, moved out, or rather, was kicked out by Big Daddy. The space filled with Billy, a smart-mouthed beanpole from England who hopped aboard one of their boats and never looked back. Jimmy was grateful for his company. For some reason, Billy never called Jimmy by his real name. Instead, Cass. Jimmy often wondered about it, but Billy just shrugged. And while the family thought they became friends, Jimmy really came into his own thanks to Billy, who exchanged secretive glances and long stares with Jimmy over the supper table, resulting in moaned whispers and wriggling under the sheets hours later. And with that, Jimmy turned right to head to the harbor to find Billy. Billy helped run the smuggling back and forth. Ships usually came 3 times a week with cargo that needed to be shipped to the family house for immediate processing. But after the Prohibition nutbags in Washington got their way, The message came down from Big Daddy that they secured a hooch smuggler up from Canada, and they'll be importing it almost like clockwork. Jimmy never saw Billy anymore. Jimmy took his sweet time strolling down the street to the harbor. He loved days like this, but he never got to enjoy them anymore since business picked up. When Jimmy turned 16 years old, right before he got into the business, he and Billy would comb the harbor for any treasures, look up ladies' skirts, and watch the sailors bake in the sun. Cass! Jimmy looked around and realized he'd walked right to the harbor without realizing it. Down in a small wooden boathouse, Billy waved to him. Jimmy looked around and noted no other company. They were getting bold now, going out in the middle of the day to meet with ships. "Hey, Billy, what's happening?" Jimmy smiled, climbing down and reaching for Billy's hand. But Billy laughed and embraced him tight. "Nothing much. Waiting for the damn boys to get back," Billy said, letting Jimmy go and jabbing his fingers to the harbor waters. "What's the haul?" Billy sighed and stretched, Jimmy watching closely as a strip of skin peeked under Billy's ratty shirt. 5 cases of the finest ale, my friend. Also got a new thing coming." Billy walked to the other side of the boathouse, lifting the lid off a small crate. "Got a small sampling the other night on accident? Check it out." Jimmy followed him and saw inside a few dozen tan boxes, one already opened. Hundreds of little white capsules laid in the box, nestled together. Jimmy picked one up and held it against the light, squinting. "What's this supposed to be?" Billy shrugged. "Ralph called it paradise, but he wouldn't say anything else." Jimmy tossed the capsule back in the box. "Looks like coke to me." Billy nodded. "Probably is. Just found a different way of distributing it." He bent down to pick up the lid, accentuating the curve of his spine and jutting out his ass. Jimmy, without a moment's hesitation, grabbed Billy's hips and pulled him flush against his groin, causing Billy to moan quietly. "Why, Cass, you wild man," Billy gasped, feigning shock while still bent over. "Well, don't wiggle your ass like a 2-cent whore and I'll control myself better," Jimmy replied, grinding slow and deliberate. It had been a while since they were both this playful with each other. As they grew older, it became harder and harder to find time to spend together, even if they did share a room. Ralph and Leo slept right next door, and they didn't dare try anything. Their roles in the family were to ensure the family's business ran smoothly, and to provide children for the next generation. Any deviation was blasphemous, even if Jimmy had it on good authority that Leo and Michael still pulled on each other's cocks on occasion. "What, you wouldn't have me any other way, would you?" Billy laughed, straightening and turning around, looping his arms around Jimmy's neck, smiling. But Jimmy could see the sadness building. And no matter how good Billy was at charming people, Jimmy could see right past it. "What's wrong?"
"I just miss this, you know,"
Billy mumbled, resting his forehead against the crook of Jimmy's neck and shoulder. Jimmy sighed and eased away, a stern look on his face. He knew where this was going.
"I miss it too, Billy, but we're getting older. We need to get a couple of dames and get some baby kings out and running, don't we?"
Jimmy frowned. Billy scoffed and looked away, but Jimmy pressed on.
"This was always for fun, and I'm always going to have fun with you, but we have responsibilities. It's time to stop fooling around."
"So why are you here, exactly?"
Jimmy reached into his inside jacket pocket and pulled out an envelope. I found discrepancies. Billy stared at them and swallowed.
Hey, Cass, you shouldn't be showing me this.
You're not going to open it. Just take it to Ralph.
Why me, exactly?
Cass shrugged. Because they don't take me seriously up there? This isn't the first time it's happened, and they like you well enough to listen to you. He pressed the envelope in Billy's hands. Billy rolled his eyes and tucked it in his back pocket.
I'll go when the boys get back.
Jimmy nodded and sniffed, patting Billy on the shoulder. Thanks, man. I owe you one. Billy shrugged it off and went back to work.
That's what you do for family, James, he dismissed.
The usage of his actual name threw Jimmy for a minute. Billy only called him James once before, but during a wild, hot night of sex where Billy, face down, tried to entice Jimmy into going faster and harder. He figured calling him James would anger him enough to work Billy over, but Jimmy kept his cool and kept on teasing Billy. Jimmy smiled to himself at the memory. He had no doubt in his mind that Billy grew to love him. In a way, Jimmy loved him too, but not in a way that would benefit Billy at all, and certainly not at the same level. Sighing, Jimmy turned to head back up the steps. "Don't fall in love, Billy," he said before continuing up and walking on. Precisely 3 hours after Jimmy arrived back at his desk, someone came knocking at his door. He knew the guard wouldn't disturb him in the middle of work unless it was important, but given it was a Wednesday in the middle of the afternoon, he doubted someone was trying to snuff him. "Come in," Jimmy called. The door opened and Leo walked in. Jimmy dropped his pen and stood. Leo and Jimmy never saw eye to eye. Leo, in charge of personnel, hired back-alley thugs and used them as torpedoes against the king's enemies. Jimmy didn't like these men, and often fought over Leo about using them and associating them with the king's. But Leo would laugh in his face and tell him to go back to his math problems. No, Jimmy did not like Leo at all. "What can I help you with?" Jimmy asked. Leo grinned, showing his two white, two straight teeth.
"Michael wants to see you."
Jimmy felt a swooping sensation down to his toes, and his blood ran cold. Seeing Michael never bore well for anyone. When some of the other members of the family went to his office, they were never heard from again. The last one, Anna, the only sister they had, mysteriously disappeared in the middle of a dark January night for no explicable reason. After that, people held their heads low.
"Is this about the money? I'm sorry I brought it up. I just thought..."
Jimmy started, but Leo held up a hand.
"I don't know what it's about, and I don't care. But you better come with me now, otherwise he'll come get you himself,"
Leo stated, his grin never leaving his face. Sighing, Jimmy packed his briefcase, straightened his tie, and followed Leo out the door. He glanced back just for a minute. Jimmy had a sinking feeling it'd be the last time he'd ever lay eyes on the prison. With a sniff, he turned and shut the door behind him. Michael's office sat just beneath and over to the left of Big Daddy's. Out of all of the offices they had, his remained the largest. Most never talked to Michael, usually diverted to his deputy, Ralph. Jimmy, even though biologically related to Michael, barely saw the man more than 3 times a year. Leo led Jimmy up the stairs and stopped outside Michael's door. He knocked 3 times, and Jimmy heard the scratch of a metal peep guard sliding out of place. They checked out, and the door unlocked. Jimmy looked at Leo as he opened the door.
"Good luck,"
Leo smiled before pushing the door open for Jimmy. Michael's space was well decorated, modest, simple. A desk and a chair in the center surrounded by filing cabinets and plants. If Jimmy didn't know better, he would have assumed it to be a normal business office. But he knew what hid in the filing cabinets. Execution orders, drug claims and deals, his own money reports he handed off every week. And rolled up next to the cabinets, a large paper which Jimmy knew to be a map of their turf. He gulped. "Jimmy, how are you?" A voice from his right, and Jimmy turned to see Michael in an adjacent building room with six other guys. Ralph and the other five, who Jimmy did not recognize, eyed Jimmy with caution. They were leaning over the meeting table, another map spread before them. New York City. The files laid strewn across the table had big red letters, Morgan, with photos and profiles. Some photos had giant red X's over them, others red circles. The closest one to Jimmy was of a pretty blonde girl smiling. He shivered. Michael walked out of the room, shutting the door behind him, grabbing Jimmy by the shoulders.
"It's been so long, brother. How have you been?"
Jimmy shrugged, and Michael let go, heading over to the other side of his desk.
"I'm good, I suppose."
He swallowed.
"Why am I here?"
"Well, there's something that came up we're going to need you to take care of," Michael stated, pulling open a desk drawer and withdrawing a manila folder.
"Is it about the money? I'm sorry, Michael, I shouldn't have brought it up. If you want, I can gloss over it next time."
Michael snapped his eyes to Jimmy, who knew to shut up right then.
"It's not about the discrepancy, Jimmy. We can figure out who's stealing from the pot and we'll take care of them. Though we are grateful you found out, that's not why you're here."
Jimmy exhaled the breath he didn't even know he was holding. He didn't know why he thought that just because he found some missing money he would have to pay for it. But that left another question. Why was he here? With a jolt, he remembered Billy. They were out in broad daylight. Any one part of the family could have seen them.
Shit, fuck, fuck, shit.
"We need you on a tracking mission." Jimmy pulled his thoughts back in confusion.
"I thought Ed did tracking."
Michael nodded.
"We figured it was time for a promotion."
"This is good, Jimmy," Michael explained, standing and handing Jimmy the file. He opened it. Cautiously, like it really was too good to be true. Inside the file looked like the others on the table in the other room. The first page listed a profile for a New York City detective by the name of Dean Winchester. A grainy photo next to the stats showed a young man about Jimmy's own age, with a black Homburg, well-fitted trousers held by suspenders, smoking a cigarette next to an older man whose face was obscured by scratch marks.
"His name is Dean, and he's a threat,"
Michael stated, staring at Jimmy. Jimmy closed the file.
"Am I supposed to be head?"
Michael shook his head.
"No, no beheading, no kidnapping, no nothing. Just track him and send us weekly reports, just like you do now."
"Why?"
Jimmy couldn't help but ask.
"And why now? Why me?" We know how much you've wanted to get out there, Jimmy, so now here's your chance. Don't talk to him, don't engage him, just track him. And with that, Michael shut the desk drawer and sat down. Go pack your things, you're leaving tonight. Jimmy stood silent, not sure about what just happened. True, he always wanted to leave that prison of an office and explore with his brothers around the city, getting some street experience, but he didn't expect to be thrusted into a job he didn't think he qualified for. Jimmy thought about when the day came where he was finally trusted. He'd skip out of the room on cloud nine. Instead, he shook, trying hard not to show Michael how unsteady he felt on his own two feet. He shut the door, and as he made his way down the hall, he thought of the smiling blonde girl, and Morgan, and the map of New York. He had the distinct feeling he'd be heading into a hurricane with no signs of ending in sight. For the first time in his life, Jimmy felt terrified.
Dean. Dean loved Bobby Singer as much as his own father. Some days even more. Bobby had been a part of their family since before Dean could remember, and while he and John had a few spats, Bobby always looked out for Sam and Dean. A surprisingly gentle man for being a gruff and stubborn Irishman and police commissioner, Dean credited his current position at the NYPD to Bobby as much as his own father. And even now, Bobby came into his office early for the boys, trying to help them pick up on a lead on their father. "We might have a tip," he said, pulling out a file from his desk as Dean and Sam sat down on the other side. "One of our guys said he thought he saw John down by the Lloyds." Dean shivered and took the file, reading over the sworn statement. Lloyds, a bar down on 44th, had a reputation. "He was there? Out in the open?" Dean asked, perturbed. The Torpedoes, Bimbos, and Pikes went to Lloyd's looking for work. The most ruthless mercenaries often traded drinks with the scum of the underground for booze, money, and drugs. John knew of the place, but never stepped inside. "Assuming this guy wasn't completely ossified when he supposedly saw John, then yeah, he was there and went in there," Bobby sighed, leaning back in his chair. The three sat in silence, letting the words and the implications sink in. Dean wouldn't believe it. "Fine. We'll go there tonight, see if we can round up anyone," he said, standing. "Make sure you don't look like bulls, son," Bobby warned, handing Dean the file. "They'll jump on you like stink on cheese." Sam smiled, nodded, then stood next to Dean. "Thanks, Bobby. We'll stop if we find anything." Bobby sniffed and looked back at his papers on his desk as Dean and Sam walked out the door. Once outside, Sam dropped his smile in place of a furious glare at Dean. "Did you know about this?" he demanded, snatching the file from Dean's hands. "If I knew them, we would have already checked Lloyd's, you idiot." Dean tried grabbing it back, but Sam held it out of reach, rifling through it. "I'm talking about being more reckless. He never would have went in there, ever. You didn't notice anything? How could I, Sam? I haven't seen him. You've been working next to him for 4 years, Sam shouted over Dean, calling attention to themselves from passers-by. Dean shook his head and grabbed Sam into a neighboring alleyway. He looked around them, assured that the only thing near them was a mangy cat looking for food, and sighed. "For the last 2 years, I've been going on some investigations on my own. Small stuff, but still, he wasn't next to me. When I would come back, he'd be off on a mission. I saw him maybe 3 times in the last year, tops." The two stood in silence as the sounds of the city echoed around them against the buildings. The out-of-character behavior of their father, only slightly more alarming than the fact that he decided to go off on his own, without help, neck-deep into the underground mob scene. "This is a problem," Sam stated out loud to no one. Dean nodded absently, trying to wrap his head around what to do next. "We have to go, I suppose," he mused, staring off into space. Sam shook his head. "I am not setting foot in there, all right? I mean, look at us." Sam patted on his clothes. True, he dressed far too civil to pass for a bimbo, but Dean knew how to fix that. "Be fine, I'll fix us up. Burn your glad rags, slick back your hair, and meet me at my place by 6, okay? Sam nodded, and Dean snatched the file back from him and headed back down towards the street, calling back over his shoulder, "Don't tell Queen Sheba where you're going. The less people who know, the better." Dean laughed as Sam rolled his eyes and threw a bottle at him. Dean knew how to dress, talk, and act like these scumbags. While he never actually dug around with them like his father had, he still had a pretty swell understanding of how the scourge of New York City's underbelly viewed the world. He made sure the red suspenders held up his pants good and nice, and rolled up the sleeves of his short. Some of these men were well-dressed, but most not. Most were working-class folk, looking to make a buck here or there on some assassination attempt, or drug, or hooch selling. He traded his tailored pants for some bigger ones, and his white Oxford for a dirty and somewhat stained blue button-down, complete with necktie and suspenders. He liked the red suspenders. Never had a chance to wear them till now. Sam arrived not 5 minutes later after Dean finished getting ready. Dean opened the door and found his brother, still dressed in his lawyer clothes, only with his hair slicked back. "Oh, we gotta fix you," Dean mumbled, pushing Sam inside.
2 hours later, they wandered down to 46th Street. Lloyd's was a camouflaged place, not advertised with the other light signs, and hid itself beneath a skin bar in a Java hut. The people who needed to know where it was knew, and the people who happened to stumble in there looking for a drink often found themselves tossed out with the trash. A large and sweaty bouncer stood outside the door in the alley between the Java hut and the skin bar. If he never occasionally itched his nose, one could mistake him for a statue. Dean approached him with trepidation. "Hello there, sir," he started, swinging out a hand to greet the fine fellow. The man continued to stare at the brick wall in front of him. Dean shrugged, signaled to Sam when he caught up, and they both made for the door. The bouncer moved so fast, Dean almost fell off balance, when suddenly a hand, as hard and solid as the brick wall, stopped him. "Bulls," the man grumbled, turning his head towards the boys. Dean shook his head, trying to work out a clever lie. Sam stepped forward. "Sir, if we were cops, why would we be going in here?" The bouncer squinted his eyes in confusion, and Dean took his cue. "Right, I mean, come on now, we would be risking our lives now, wouldn't we? That's just stupid, right?" Dean turned to Sam, and they both laughed a high, fake laugh, but the bouncer chuckled with them. "All right, fellas, go on through. I had to ask, we had one in here a week ago, and whew, it's better to avoid that altogether now, isn't it?" He lowered his eye and stared at both of them. Dean tried not to make contact. "Right, exactly. We were told to meet someone here, and, here we are," he laughed, nervous. The bouncer grew suspicious again. "Who you meeting?" Sam rolled his eyes and pushed a stuttering Dean out of the way. "Can't tell you, bub. He's pretty legit. We wouldn't want to compromise anything." The bouncer glared at him for a moment and laughed, true and hearty, before patting them both on the shoulders, almost knocking them to the ground. "You're all right, kids. You're all right. Go ahead in." The bouncer stepped aside, and Dean looked at his brother for some slight reassurance. Sam shrugged and pointed at the handle. "Right. Dean was a man. He's gonna go in there and face anyone and anything that stands in his way. He'll rescue his damn father. Damn it." He opened the door, and they stepped inside. Lloyd's wasn't nearly as messy and dirty as Dean had expected, or hoped. If he were to look at it through the eyes of a passerby, it'd look just like another bar, if bars were still legal. A dark red leather coated the walls, up against them, dark mahogany booths. A bar located on the far end of the room, lit up by multicolored lights, reflected all the imported hooch from around the world. Men, dressed nice or dressed like bums, laughed at each other's jokes. Over in the corner, a little stage where a Negro girl crooned some mournful song about lost love while winking at every man who threw a dollar up. Everyone seemed to know everyone, and when Dean and Sam walked in, most of them stopped and looked. More Dean than anything. He probably should have left the suspenders at home. "Hey, nice suspenders, kid!" Some old fart of a drunk laughed next to him, and the rest of the place laughed and went back to business. Dean heard Sam snicker, and promptly slammed his foot down on his, satisfied with the moan of pain, and went back to take in his surroundings. A man in a white button-down and a blue tie sat on the far end of the bar chatting with the barkeep. His face looked far too serious to say old foolish drunk, but he still had a tall drink sitting in front of him. Smiling, Dean turned to Sam. "There's a drunk over there." Sam looked over Dean's shoulder to see the same man. He shrugged. "So? Dean, everyone here's a drunk." The old fart crinkled his nose. "Hey!" before emitting a loud, gassy fart and falling over on his chair, causing more laughs. "You buy a guy like that a couple of drinks and he opens right up to you. Let me go talk to him. You stay here and don't get into any trouble, okay?" "I think I should come," Sam started, but Dean shook his head. "I've had a lot more experience doing this, so you just park yourself over by the pretty girl and give her some money." Dean winked, sliding a few bills into Sam's hand, and pushed him to the stage. Sam sighed and trudged on, Dean slapping him on the back with encouragement. He turned back to the man at the bar and walked over. The man didn't resemble most drunks or alcoholic office men. Usually their skin hung off their bones. They were pale and had a certain slump to their shoulders. But this man sat upright, only a slight bend in his back. He had broad shoulders and certainly did not lack a sense of poise or care about himself. He had grace, for sure, but Dean could see the walls up around him from all the way across the room. Dean decided that if anyone seen anything and would be willing to talk to him, this guy was it. Dean reached the bar and slid into a seat two away from the man. The bartender noticed and nodded. "What'll it be, boy?" he sniffed. Dean stopped, caught off guard. He forgot he didn't drink and he just sat down at a bar. "Shit. Got a Coke?" he asked. The bartender laughed and grabbed a can and slid it over with a glass and some ice. The man next to Dean noticed and huffed a laugh as well. "Try one?" he asked, quiet and serious. Dean held off, turning to him right away, determined to play this out. He took a sip. "No, just looking out for my brother." He pointed to the stage where Sam sat, surrounded by drunk men catcalling at the woman. "First time out, and, well, you know, need my senses to be sharp." The man sniffed and took another swig of his whiskey. "I guess that's understandable, though I doubt one sip would kill you." Dean shrugged. He supposed the guy was right, but then again, he still hated to drink alcohol in general, so there was also that. He turned to talk directly to the man, whose attention remained on the drink in his hand. "So, you a regular, or..." Dean started, realizing he had nowhere to go with the sentence. "Or what?" the man asked, taking another sip of his drink. Dean shrugged and turned his back on the bar, looking over the crowd of men. "Dunno, I mean, I'm new to all this, so throw me a bone or something here." The man raised his eyebrows, but did not smile at Dean's lack of grace. Cheeks burning, Dean sipped his pop and glanced over at Sam. He wondered, vaguely, if Sam would have handled this better. The man shook his head and lifted his eyes to the bartender, shaking his glass for a refill. Dean huffed. "You don't talk much, do you?" The man shrugged. "I just don't see why my life is any concern to yours," he stated, finally turning towards Dean. His face had delicate lines, where the man must have frowned too much in his youth. His face read as serious, someone who probably didn't laugh much or enjoy life as much as the next guy. However, as straight-aligned as the man seemed, Dean noticed a playful energy in his eyes, a deep blue that seemed to pierce through your very soul. He smiled. "It's not. Just trying to make conversation." Dean nodded, sipping his Coke, breaking eye contact with the stranger. A ripple of goose flesh creeped down his arms, but he steadfastly ignored it and watched the man slumped over in the corner booth. "Maybe there's better luck over there."
"No, I don't come here often."
Dean turned back to the stranger with a smile. "Now see, was that so hard?" The stranger rolled his eyes and drank. Dean set his glass down on the table and leaned in closer to the man as the bartender came closer to the two.
"Regardless, can I ask you something?"
he questioned in a hushed tone. The man nodded but did not move. Dean slid over a chair, invading the man's personal space. He took the photo of John out and slid it over to him. "Trying to find this man. You seen him around?" The man glanced over to the picture mid-sip. He stopped, took the photo from Dean, and eyed it closely. "Looks like a bull." "You one?" he asked, giving Dean the picture back. Dean shook his head.
No, my brother and I, we have some ties. This guy took something from ours, and we're looking to get it back, Dean lied, tucking the picture back into his jacket. The man sighed, finishing off his drink. Can't say that I've seen him. Sorry. He stood, grabbing his jacket and putting it on. The man stopped as he looked down at Dean's suspenders. He gently ran a finger over them, then tucked it in between the material and Dean's shoulder. Dean shivered again as the man leaned down next to him. Nice suspenders, he muttered before withdrawing his hand and walking across the floor and out the door. Dean swallowed, finished his coke, and turned back around to the bar. His shoulders tingled where the man touched, and his chills wouldn't leave. He glanced down the bar, and the men talked among themselves, unaware of Dean. The bartender, however, stared long and hard at Dean as he polished a glass. Uncomfortable and sensing trouble, Dean smiled, set his glass down, and went off to find Sam.
So, you got... nothing. You got nothing, Sam groaned as the two walked down the street, bumping against busy passers-by and businessmen.
Dean sighed and ran his hand over his face in defeat. He didn't understand what happened back at the bar, and he cursed himself for being such an idiot with that guy. Maybe it was the suspenders, Sam wondered. Dean huffed and slapped Sam upside the head as they both laughed. But soon after, they sobered into their own silence. They still had no good deeds on their father's whereabouts. Dean admitted to himself that he did screw up the whole operation just because of one guy, and that he should have thought harder about his subject of interrogation. He knew not to denounce the subject as well. That's how a lot of men get caught up in shit they don't belong. But by not being able to let it go, Dean found himself staring at the sidewalk as he strolled, replaying the whole conversation in his head. It was obvious the man didn't want to talk with Dean, but for some reason Dean kept pushing. He usually knew a dead stick on first glance, but Dean couldn't shake the feeling that the man knew something Dean didn't. A burning, acrid smell filled the air, and Dean breathed it in deep before coughing, trying to catch a breath of fresh air. He felt more than saw Sam take off next to him, off into what looked like a billowing black cloud. Dean wiped the tears from his eyes as he took after Sam. By the time Dean caught up, Sam had tried unsuccessfully to run straight into his apartment, still alive with flames licking the sides of the building and throwing toxins into the sky. Several firemen held him back as Dean rushed to pull his brother back away from the fire. "No, I have to go back in! Let me go!" he roared, trying in vain to throw everyone off of him, but it was no use. The firemen were stronger than Sam, and they weren't letting either one in. Sam grabbed a fireman by his jacket and shook him. "Where is she?" he demanded. Dean eased him off the fighter and pushed him away. The man shook his head and brushed his jacket off. "I don't know what you're talking about, pal," he answered, looking back up at the apartment. Sam shook his head and pointed at the flames. "There was a girl in there. Did you get her out? Did you find her?" The fireman looked at Dean and then at Sam. He shrugged. "There wasn't anyone in there, boy. It was an electrical fire. Happens all the time. I assume you're the owner?" Dean didn't hear that last part as he and Sam exchanged puzzled looks. Sam left Grace in there just a couple of hours earlier in her hair curlers and nightgown. Something didn't add up. Dean turned back to the man. "There wasn't any girl up there. Legs about yay high," Dean gestured. "Blonde, little cute Deb?" he inquired as the flame shrank in size and the neighbors looked on. The fireman shook his head. "There was a man who died on the lower floor, but he's a geezer and couldn't get out in time. Other than that, the place is empty." Someone called the fireman over, and he nodded his head at the boys before leaving. Sam stared helplessly up at the blackened windows while Dean's brain raced a mile a minute. Grace was missing. Grace was gone. "Where did she go?" Dean asked himself. Sam turned to him. "We need to find out. Now." Sam stalked off to Dean's car down the street. He didn't look back once at the charred shell of the apartment. Dean stood there, watching. He replayed the conversation at the bar over in his mind like a hamster on a wheel, trying to figure out if he said anything that would tip that man off about Dean or Sam, or where he lived or what they did. The picture. He showed that man the picture of their father. Dean mentally cursed himself and ran a shaking hand over his face. He had no clue if that stranger had ties to more dangerous people, or worse, had their father himself. A mistake was made. Fuck. By the time Dean managed to walk himself back over to his automobile, Sam had already planted himself in the passenger seat, staring off into space through the windshield. Dean's car had a few years to it, being a Chevy D, but it was his father's and he couldn't get rid of it. Plus, John outfitted it to store a few guns and other necessities in the floor and under the seats. Sam seemed to remember how to pick the lock, because in his lap sat Dean's police-issue Colt 38 long rifle. Unsure of how to bring up his mistake with Sam, Dean opened the door and slid into the driver's seat, silent as a stone. They both sat there for a minute, watching the fireman poke around the remnants of Sam's home. Sam sighed and reached over to start the engine. The car roared to life, and Dean placed his hands on the steering wheel as Sam turned to gaze out the window again. "We have work to do," he mumbled, and Dean nodded to himself before slamming his foot to the ground and accelerating off.